still lame.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ryan, for that wonderful introduction. Okay. Today we're going to be talking about PowerPoint. PowerPoint, PowerPoint, PowerPoint.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly Draft Edition, Ethan Weiss here with you once again. Before we introduce our guest, we got to get into the housekeeping. You guys know the drill already. So first things first, follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at EthanGSN. You can follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. And subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. Every subscription helps the channel grow. You can follow us on iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio. I think Spotify's still pending. I got to check on that. But subscribe, give us 5 stars, tell us you love our voices, say nice things about us, or don't. Doesn't matter as long as there's 5 stars. All right. Let me introduce the guest. We've got Elliot Crist. He's got the Draft Daily Pod. You can follow him on Twitter at Elliot Crist. That is Elliot with one L. Elliot, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, guys, I'm pumped to be here. I love talking running backs and quarterbacks and the draft in general. And the Giants are one of the more interesting teams, and the way they go really determines the rest of the draft. So I'm excited to talk Giants.
Perfect. Especially, listen, if you're going to be talking, you know, some of the top picks, I feel like the Giants have got to be one of the more intriguing options just because of, you know, they're always fairly relevant, either in the standings or in the news. So, you know, forget about the Browns at 1-4. We're talking Giants at number 2.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as a Giants fan, I'm not a Giants fan, but if I was a Giants fan, I'd be following what the Browns do very closely and really hope that they sign Kirk Cousins or maybe even A.J. McCarron and then decide to pass on a quarterback altogether, and then the Giants are sitting there perfectly in the draft.
I would love if they sign A.J. McCarron because he is straight trash.
$60 for a pile of garbage. It's great. It's super fun. An NFL team does it every year, and this year it's going to be the Browns.
It's going to be amazing. All right. Let's jump right into it. Let's start with quarterbacks, Weiss, just because that seems to be the primary focus of Giants Twitter. We'll get into Saquon Barkley and the running backs a bit later. Elliot, I'm going to ask you right off the bat. I'm going to take a guess at who, now not necessarily the best, I'm going to say who your favorite quarterback prospect is just based on your Twitter bio. Is it Baker Mayfield?
I do really like Baker Mayfield.
My man. Weiss is just starting to come around to him a little bit. I've been on the Mayfield bandwagon all year. I don't know if that's the proper place to start because we, you know, obviously Rosen being the pretty, I'll say consensus number one quarterback prospect. But let's jump right into it. I'm just going to throw it to you. Let's start broad. What do you think, assuming the pick is quarterback, who do you think the Giants should take? What's the best fit?
Best fit is tough because you look at Pat Shurmur and we don't have a huge sample size of what he's going to do as a head coach. We kind of can look at what he did in Minnesota and try to work off that. You know, he had those weapons like the Giants have now. The thing that worries me with the Giants is the offensive line play is pretty bad. And so then you bring in a guy like Josh Rosen. And Rosen has a ton of things that are easy to get very excited about. And I'll get to those in a minute. So the concerns that come in with Rosen are that, and he improved in this first one from 2016 to 2017. The first one was he stayed on his first read too long, which he may do with Odell Beckham, but, you know, looking at Odell Beckham an extra second may not be the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, true.
The second one was he struggled under pressure. His decision-making under pressure wasn't terrific. You know, if you got in his face, he could kind of start forcing the ball or throwing it up for grabs and not realizing when a play was dead. And kind of, especially against Texas A&M, both years, you know, he felt pressure and he would just kind of chuck the ball up. And then Matt Waldman described this best to me, so I'm just going to kind of steal what he said. Rosen, if he was a boxer, he'd be a technician, right? And that's how he wins. So he'd be like Floyd Mayweather, right? Just a great technician. But the thing that makes Floyd Mayweather a great boxer is that he doesn't get into brawls. Josh Rosen, when he starts to feel like it's a back-and-forth game or he's down 7 points and wants to make a play, he starts trying to brawl. And he starts, you know, he'll roll to his right and throw across the middle of the field late. He did that against Memphis and was pick six. The game against Texas A&M, where everyone's raving about how he came back, the deep pass over the middle went right through the safety's hand, should have been picked. He kind of starts forcing these decisions and starts trying to brawl instead of just win with his, you know, accuracy and decision-making. And that's one of the concerns, is that how do you work that out of someone, right? Because the NFL is not like college, where there's all these big leads and big deficits. It's a lot of back and forth football, kind of in the 7 to 10 point range. And if whenever you're in those situations, you start trying to do too much, that can really hinder you. Now, this makes it sound like I hate Josh Rosen, and that is not. I just think whenever we have prospects, we always try to decide if we like a guy or if we dislike a guy, right? And we try to just, once we do that, we try to just only talk about his strengths or only talk about his weaknesses. And I think it's really important to understand that every prospect can fail and every prospect can succeed, in trying to figure out what they do well in order for them to succeed. Because, listen, I'm a Jets fan. You guys are Giants fans. We all hate the New England Patriots. But what they've done so well over the years is basically establish what someone is good at and just have them do that. So with jumping back into Rosen, what he does well is his mechanics are perfect. Like, he's legitimately built in a lab in terms of what he does, from his feet to his release to everything. His accuracy is terrific, especially over the middle of the field. I think PFF had him as the best intermediate thrower in the draft, 10 to 19 yards. He works with a tight end incredibly well. He can throw the ball down the field. You know, when you look at the fit with the Giants, I really want wherever Rosen goes to have a tight end that he's going to be able to use over the middle of the field, because he's going to pick linebackers and safeties apart. He's really good at using his eyes and setting up his tight end to make plays over the middle. And then you throw in a guy like Evan Engram, and that starts getting you excited. Damn. And his ability to give people you know, a chance down the field and throw these dimes like 40, 50 yards down the field, that makes you excited for Odell Beckham. And then his short accuracy in terms of always hitting the guy in the correct shoulder. And what I mean by that is, let's say a guy is running a slant to the right, you're leading him, you're not kind of forcing him to stop and turn for the ball. That can be the difference between an Odell Beckham, you know, 70-yard slant, and him having to slow down and then the corner having a step to catch him and make the tackle, and it's a 7-yard play. So those are the things about Rosen that get you really excited. So if Rosen is able to kind of work on some of that stuff mentally and improve under pressure – and stay healthy, because, you know, he has the shoulder surgery and the two concussions, then I think he's going to be a fantastic player. I think his floor is incredibly high. I think his ceiling isn't as quite as high as some other guys that we'll talk about in a little bit. But I think he's like a better version of Matt Ryan. That's kind of my comparison for him.
Do the injuries concern you, though? Because that's one of the one things about fans, what I hear, is that they're sort of concerned about the injuries. I personally am not. But what about you? Does it concern you, you know, looking at him and studying him?
So the way I always kind of view injuries in general, other than like violent running backs, like we'll talk with Darius Geis in a little bit, is that if the doctors feel comfortable with it, I'm kind of comfortable with it. You know what I'm saying? Because I don't necessarily have a medical degree, and injuries can happen by chance. And one thing that about Rosen is that he does kind of know his limitations. You know, he's not running around like a madman. The shoulder surgery, you know, he came back this year and looked fine. Having two concussions is not ideal by any stretch of the imagination, especially in the NFL today. But quarterbacks are probably the least likely position to get concussions. So I don't necessarily know if that's going to be a recurring issue. It could be, but it's not something that overly concerns me, no. And then his personality that people talk about, you know, he wants to get paid to play football and all this other stuff, I don't care.
Overblown.
Yeah, it's legitimately just, you know, here's a guy that speaks his mind, and he comes from a background of a wealthy family, and they're kind of like liberal thinkers from California, and he really wants to show that he belongs with all these guys that came up from different situations, and try to show that he understands their situations, and he talks a lot about it. I personally think it's refreshing, as opposed to just, you know, robotic answers from quarterbacks that don't mean anything. The one thing that is interesting with Rosen is that the school he wanted to go to was Stanford, and they were ready to offer him a scholarship, and apparently he said something so egregious they pulled the scholarship, and he admits to it. I don't know what it was, but he's like, yeah, that did happen. That is where I wanted to go, and that's why I didn't go there. And, you know, I've learned from that and tried to mature. So to me, that was dumb. You know, having a hot tub in your apartment or whatever and having girls over in the apartment, I'm all for it. Like,
boss move.
It's a college life, man. It's a college dream.
If I could have put a hot tub in my apartment in college any girl showed up, I would have done that. But I would have just been a weird dude soaking in a hot tub. So I have no issues with that. If you want to jump into the next guy that's probably going to be the most hotly debated guy is Sam Darnold. The way I describe Sam Darnold is if Aaron Rodgers and Blake Bortles had a baby.
Oh, God.
And wow. So every time I say that, people's response is that good or is that bad? And it's not really either. It just kind of shows you his ceiling and his floor because his mechanics are a mess. His feet are bad. He's got a long, loopy delivery. The reason the loopy delivery matters is because NFL windows are shorter, right? And so the longer it takes you to get rid of the ball, the quicker those windows close. And, you know, he's got velocity on the football, but you don't want to take any more time than you have to get rid of the football. And because he holds the ball so far away from him, you're going to get some strip sacks and turnovers. His feet are all over the place. They're pointing in the wrong direction. He steps away from throws, and it leads to his inaccuracies. When his feet are good, he's so good. And where he's best at in the class, and maybe as good as anyone I've seen, is on the run, because his mechanics just kind of come natural to him, and he starts throwing dimes all over the field. So if Shermer gets Darnold, is able to get him on the move and get him in these comfortable situations, design rollouts, I think he could be very successful in New York as well. You just have to realize that, you know, I think he'll just be turning 21. He'll be the youngest quarterback in the NFL. He may take a little bit of time. You know, he's going to have to continue to work on those mechanics. The upside is very much there. The downside is also there. And then his interceptions. So he came out really strong, obviously, his sophomore year. He was talked about this year as the surefire tank for Sam Darnold. This is the guy we want, right? Teams adjusted to him in the offseason, and this is something that a lot of quarterbacks have struggled with. We saw it with Watson. We saw it with Winston. Name the top quarterback that came back and then the next year took a step back. This is their first time in their lives that defensive coordinators have spent, you know, 9 months to a year designing game plans to stop them and throwing them different looks that they haven't seen. So it doesn't necessarily worry me. He didn't necessarily make the same mistake that often. I think he can improve on those areas. And then you want to talk about your boy Baker Mayfield, right?
Let's go.
Let's talk about Baker Mayfield's numbers for a second.
Crazy.
So PFF has him as, you know, the most NFL throws, the best accuracy to most levels of the field, throws a great deep ball. The other things that I love about Baker Mayfield are that he showed up when it mattered most. So you want to talk about, you know, he didn't win the Rose Bowl or whatever it was. Like, I put that more on the coach when I watched that game. But if we look at his numbers in the fourth quarter and when trailing by 1-7, they were the best in the class, both of them. So to give you those numbers, I'm trying to pull it up right now.
I mean, while you pull up the numbers, to me, and this is where when I started the podcast, I referenced your bio because in your bio it says Deshaun Watson's number one fan. You can analyze a guy. You can watch every single second of game tape on a guy. At the end of the day, there are some guys where, you know what, the numbers are good, but you watch the tape and they're just winners. And it happened with Deshaun Watson. And to me, I feel like people are just way overthinking Baker Mayfield as he is as a prospect. He is the most accurate, like you said. He is a winner. And I think in the right system, he could be by far the best quarterback in this draft class.
Yeah, I'm with you. He's my number one quarterback. So
there you go.
The fourth quarter passing, he was 156 for 215, which is a 72.56% completion percentage for 1,750 yards, 14 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, and a 104 rating. Now, I think the fourth quarter stuff can be a little overblown, especially in college, because, you know, you have so many guys, so many games where they're blowouts. So I went deeper and said, how did he do when he was trailing by 1-7 points? And these numbers are absurd. He was 142 for 205, which is a 69% completion percentage, which is awesome. 2,333 yards, 25 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, which is a 142.74 NFL rating. So when the game was on the line, Baker Mayfield balled out. Now, we talk about we're worried about Baker Mayfield being Johnny Manziel. You need to stop. Because Manziel was the guy, the best way I heard it described was Manziel is the guy that was given the world. Right, and threw it all away.
Yep.
Baker Mayfield is the guy that walked on to Texas Tech, won the job, became freshman of the year, then they gave the job to Davis Webb.
100%.
I was get drafted by the Giants and then him take Davis Webb's job. That would be an amazing end to this story. And then he transfers to Oklahoma and walks on at Oklahoma, takes Trevor Knight's job after he won, what, the Fiesta Bowl or whatever the New Year's Day Bowl was. Yep. And Trevor Knight was – Katy Perry was asking Trevor Knight out on national TV. Like, love Trevor Knight. And Baker Mayfield said, that's cool. This is my job. And then he just won every award there was and constantly showed up. I mean, Mayfield – people talk about, does his game translate to the NFL? A lot is improvisational. So he can do improvisational stuff. He reminds me of Russell Wilson, a less athletic version of him. He can hold on the ball too long and take bad plays, but at the same time, he creates a ton. You know what I'm saying? Like, he...
Yep. He's a gamer.
He is. He's a gamer. Like, that phrase is overused. But he goes through multiple progressions. He sets up linebackers with his eyes. Sometimes he relies on that. Like, the mistakes he made was basically he assumed because he looked off the safety, he was good and didn't check it before he threw again and then threw it blindly. But he moves linebackers and safeties incredibly well. He throws the deep ball incredibly well. He throws the ball so accurate. We talked about Josh Allen with the short stuff, but Mayfield has so many plays where he hits the correct shoulder and it results in so much after the play. And it makes you drool about the possibility of him playing with Engram, Shepard, who is his former teammate, and Beckham. Like, Mark Andrews became like a borderline All-American tight end with him. D.D. Westbrook looked great on these down the field routes. And I think Mayfield's skill set translates very well with the personnel of the Giants. Now, he played behind a good offensive line in Oklahoma.
Absolutely.
And the Giants, I think the Giants' offensive line is incomplete right now. Like, we don't know what they're going to do in free agency.
Incomplete, Elliot. Stop being so kind. Incomplete is being kind.
Well, they're bad. They're bad.
They're terrible. They're
bad. It's going to take more than 1 year. Let's just put it that way to fix this line.
Eric Flowers has issues. I'm trying to be nice.
Again,
he's done. He's done in New York. I don't see him. I don't see him being the starting left tackle next year.
I agree with you. I agree. But the thing is, like, Mayfield can create and can buy time and do little things behind lesser offensive line as well, and pressure doesn't face him. So that's one other reason I like him for the Giants is pressure doesn't – he's willing to step up and take a big hit, and he's able to move in the pocket kind of subtly, those slight movements, to buy extra time. So I also would love Baker in New York's media, man. Like,
oh,
people
my God,
are
scared, he'd be amazing.
But I think Baker would just – I think the media would love him. And if he showed up, man, he would do so much for football in general where players don't have to be robots and are allowed to speak.
I feel like I already have dreams of, like, him and Odell hitting the town and just tearing it up. I'm just the idea of those two on the same team just – let's just say it makes me feel some type of way.
So then I'll sum up Josh Allen real quickly. No.
Bad.
Like, he's the prospect we see literally every year.
Yeah.
I describe the NFL as the league that likes big white guys with huge arms that are bad at football. Yeah. And that's kind of what he is. He's athletic. He's can throw on the run incredibly well. He's got the best arm in the class. People keep talking about he throws 66 miles per hour. And to me, I'm like, I don't care.
Sounds like Jamarcus Russell.
It's harder to catch a ball that goes 66 miles per hour. It just is. He can't take anything off it. When you watch his film and he tries to throw a touch, he almost like babies it and the ball becomes incredibly inaccurate. And accuracy, he's got footwork issues. He sees ghosts in the pocket. He's got bad pocket presence. He played terrible against better competition. I mean, the six best teams he played against in his career, he went 95 for 186, which is a 51% completion percentage for 1,039 yards, 7 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, which is a 51 rating. So I don't get Josh Allen. If you told me he's a fourth round developmental guy and we'll see if he can hit a ceiling, I'm cool. But like where you'd have to take him in the top 10, I think that's crazy.
Now
what I see in Josh Allen? Tell me if this is accurate. I see his ceiling as Ryan Tannehill.
I think he's got a better arm than Ryan Tannehill, but in terms of an athletic comparison, it's probably pretty accurate.
If you're looking for an NFL comparison, like I think how good can Josh Allen be? I think he can be Ryan Tannehill.
He reminds me of Kyle Bowler. I don't know if you guys remember the Ravens quarterback who kind of got overdrafted because he could do all these things athletically and make big throws. And, like, there's a chance Allen hits, but historically guys that don't produce anything in college, don't then start producing a lot as a quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, so what do you take about the Wentz comparisons?
I think that they both had the same
coach, build.
The same build. And listen, I make this point a lot. I think people start comparing players based on who they look like and not who
100%.
They play. And the thing that I was reading this book on analytics by the Houston Rockets general manager, and I know it's basketball, but I think it applies here. And he says he made the rule for his scouts that you can't compare someone if they look like someone. Because too often we just start seeing, like you see with running backs all the time, he's fast, black with dreads, he's Jamaal Charles. Like, there's not 13 Jamaal Charles in this draft class. Like it's, so I don't see the Allen and Wentz thing at all. I just think that's a way people are trying to hype him up more. And then the other two guys in the draft class, Lamar Jackson and Mason Rudolph. I'm a big Mason Rudolph guy. People talk about he doesn't have arm strength. They think he's throwing lollipop passes. It's actually how they're taught to throw these long, loopy passes kind of down the field that receivers can run underneath. He made a ton of those throws, incredibly accurate. I don't think you have arm issues when you're throwing the ball 50 yards with that kind of air under it, and it drops right in a bucket for your guy. He actually had the longest pass of the season of any quarterback, 73 yards in the air.
Damn.
For completion this year. So the arm strength thing confuses me. I think he needs to work on his ability to do full read progression. A lot of it's high-low, or he kind of – you know, he isolates a safety and forces a safety to choose and then makes his read off that. And then the red zone, this is the first year he actually made throws in the red zone. They used to have a quarterback come in and kind of do that zone read BS that teams like to do. And so this year he was basically, it was a one read pass every time in the end zone or red zone. And then if he didn't like it, he got super uncomfortable and would miss plays. And then with Lamar Jackson, I'm a huge Lamar Jackson guy.
Me too.
I think he's basically – it's amazing to me because Mike Vick was no-brainer first overall pick, right? And was very, very, very raw as a quarterback. Lamar Jackson is at that level as a runner. Like, we throw around that comparison too much with Vick, but he's – like, Jackson's running ability is otherworldly. But he's way more developed as a passer. Like, he's going through progressions. He improved year to year. He's great in the pocket. He's not dropping his eyes. He's really improving his deep ball. And the one thing I love about Jackson is he does a very good job of reading progressions against zone defenses and realizing where he can move defenders and throwing the ball with anticipation, realizing that his guy is going to cross another guy. And the reason attacking zone makes me so excited about Lamar Jackson is that teams run zone more against running quarterbacks than any other players because you can't run man as much against them because if their guys turn and run up the field, there leaves a ton of space for quarterbacks to make plays. So I think Jackson has all the skill sets to be a big-time NFL quarterback. Now, I don't know if he's in play at two. I think if the Giants were to trade back, you could talk about that, and because I don't know if he would be there at the top of the second round. So I don't necessarily know if he's going to be a possibility for the Giants, but I do really like Lamar Jackson.
I think as we get closer to the combine, I think that's one guy's draft stock that's going to rise. I think he's gonna have a really good combine, and I'm gonna throw this one out. I think he could go from the Louisville Cardinals to the Arizona Cardinals. Like I could totally see that. I think he would fit well in Arizona. That's what I think.
What he needs to do is his base, so his footwork. He doesn't extend enough. He kind of takes a short stride. And it leads to accuracy issues. Now, that might be the easiest footwork to clean up. So if he cleans that up and becomes more accurate, that's terrific. And the way I think about it is, let's say he's not the most accurate passer, right? Let's say he's like a 57% completion percentage guy, and the goal is like 60-61. That 4%, he makes up for with his running ability. Because his running ability is going to be the best in the NFL at a quarterback, bar none, in my opinion.
We talked about these quarterbacks, and let me put you on the spot here. When we look back on this draft in 3 years, 5 years, how many franchise quarterbacks are going to come out of this draft class?
Ooh. Let's see. I'm going to go Baker Mayfield's one.
Okay.
I'm going to go Josh Rosen is considered right on the edge like a Matt Ryan is. So
okay.
I'm going to go Lamar Jackson as one. So that's three. I'm going to say that Sam, if Sam, I want to say if Sam Darnold goes to the Giants, I'm counting him as four. If he goes to the Browns, I'm not very confident that that works out.
Even if he sits for a year or two.
I just.
The Browns, man. It's the Browns.
And then I think Mason Rudolph's considered a really good starter in the NFL.
So we got four at least.
Four, yeah. So we got four guys I think can be franchise guys, and I think Mason Rudolph can be considered in like a Kirk Cousins kind of range.
Gotcha.
All right.
Okay. Yeah.
I dig that. Yeah, that's how much I have. I got four too. I'm not completely that low on Josh Allen. But I can see him sort of being that, you know, game manager, like that Ryan Tannehill, you know, where, you know, you look at the numbers and it looks good, but then you put on the film and you're like, wow, this guy's not that good. So I think Allen is sort of like on that edge to me. If you put him in the right situation and you coach him up and he gets put the right people around him, I think maybe you can turn him into something. But I agree. I think he is a big-time project. And then everything you said about him, I think, is spot on.
Yeah, when you talk about a guy, Allen's going to get drafted based on his ceiling, and they're going to ignore his floor. Because his floor is legitimately, okay, we're drafting top five again next year. We're thinking about a quarterback.
Damn. All right. Is that it for the quarterbacks, Weiss? We go on the quarterbacks?
Yeah, I think he you know, Elliot dropped some serious knowledge.
Yeah, honestly, like our listeners are gonna be like thrilled with this.
Well, let's finish with this.
Yeah,
in your opinion, Elliot, who if the Giants take a quarterback, who's it gonna be with the number two pick? I don't know if you're a mock draft guy, but let's just say you're playing the draft in your mind. Giants on the clock. Who are they taking?
So I think the Browns are going to end up with Cousins, McCarron, Josh Allen, or Sam Darnold. I think those are the four guys they're considering from everything I've heard. I think the Giants are going to go Rosen.
I will do jumping jacks.
I honestly don't. The only thing is Gettleman is different, man. Like he watches a ton of film and trusts what he sees, and everyone last year said, don't do McCaffrey. And he's like, McCaffrey's my guy. So I think there's a chance Gettleman falls in love with Mayfield. But I think it's going to end up being Rosen.
I agree with you. Like over the past, like, but the one thing that scares me, and we'll touch on this later, but the one thing that scares me about Gettleman, I think maybe Gettleman is more of a win now guy, you know, where he's, I mean, he is 67. So how long does he plan on doing this? You know,
that's very fair. That listen,
You know what I mean? That scares me a little bit.
I have a warm place in my heart for Gettleman because watched his Christian McCaffrey press conference, and he just basically put his 2 feet up and was like, McCaffrey's the man, ask me whatever you want. And he basically acted like Robert De Niro from any ever. And I was like, this guy's kind of awesome. He's different. That doesn't mean he's a great GM, but I have a warm place in my heart for the way he handled that.
Well, we'll see.
Let's get into running backs a little bit. I'm a huge Barkley guy. I was very, very early on the Barkley to New York Giants at number two. And then they kept losing. And just for reference, I'm a never running back in the first round guy. That's how much I liked Saquon Barkley. You spoke very highly of him during the pre-show. Let's just talk running backs in general. We could do it the same way we did quarterbacks. I think without a doubt, Saquon Barkley is the most talented running back in the draft. I don't really ever think, you know, maybe he had me fooled for a little bit, but in general, I don't think a running back is worthy or deserved of a number two overall pick because you look at the draft every year and you see an Alvin Kamara and you see a Kareem Hunt and you realize you can get unbelievable value for these guys later in the draft. So maybe why don't you start there? Why don't you touch on the value of a running back in the NFL draft? And then get into who you like and where you think they should go.
Okay, real quick before I do that, just as a counterpoint.
Yeah.
Knowing what we know about Alvin Kamara and Kareem Hunt now, do you think they'd go in the first round if they could redo it?
Oh, of course. I mean, hindsight's 2020.
Right. Absolutely. So I'm just saying, like, I get that you can find players later in the round, but I think you, or the draft, but you can do that for a lot of positions too. And listen, I get that running backs are devalued in the NFL. And I think the really key point about this is that two down running backs value in the NFL is very minute right now. So we'll get into guys like Rashad Penny later. That's the kind of guy that can't really break the top of the third round for me, no matter what, because he doesn't offer receiving ability. And I keep hearing the counter argument, there's more first and second downs than third downs. And like, I get that, you know, your math adds up to three, but my argument is that NFL teams throw 64% of the time, right? And that's including teams like the Jaguars and the Panthers who don't. You know what I'm saying? They're well below average to mess with that number. So let's call it like 68%. Teams on second down and second and five or longer situations throw the ball 80% of the time. So that third down ability that people keep throwing away is huge. And that's what makes Barkley a top five player for me in this draft and top five worthy in general, is because what he brings to your passing game is going to change everything, right? Like, I agree with you that you can find guys later in the draft, and there are going to be some guys later in this draft that are really good. But if with Barkley, he kind of brings that Alvin Kamara, Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell receiving ability. I mean, his 54 receptions, I did a study that the last 2 years that guys who finished top 20 as a running back in running back receptions, only one ever had, or only five ever had less than 20 catches in college in terms of the production metric you're looking for more than that. And then Barkley's 54 receptions would rank second among all those guys behind only DeMarco Murray's 71. Wow. Barkley is a dynamic receiver, and this creates huge matchup issues, right? So let's say the Giants are in 11 personnel, which means one tight end, one back. They have Sterling Shepard, Odell Beckham, Evan Ingram, Saquon Barkley, and whoever you want to use as the last receiver. Right? It's probably not going to be Brandon Marshall, maybe drafted, maybe free agent, but for the sake of argument, it's just player X.
Roger Lewis.
Roger Lewis. Perfect. Yeah. Thank you for making me not say player X. what you can do out of that formation will mess the defense up so much, because if the defense comes out in nickel, right, you say, okay, you have two linebackers on the field. We can split out five wide. Barkley's going to be slot. Evan Ingram's going to be slot. And you're going to have two linebackers cover those guys. Good luck. Okay, so we're going to have to bring in an extra DB on the field. Okay, well, now I have Saquon Barkley running against your DB, and I'm going to win that matchup all day. That's what that pass-catching element does for a team that can – the guy can still run. And if we just talk about his running ability, people keep knocking his vision because he bounces the ball outside. Graham Barfield did a study about his runs outside. I think outside the tackles averaged 9.6 yards per carry. So one of the reasons he did that so much is because it kept working. And people talk about he's scared of contact. He's not. I've seen him run through plenty of people. The Iowa game is the best film I've ever seen. His natural talent is incredible. Like, he's so good. And I think basically he's the LeBron James of prospects, where right now people are like, yeah, but he can't shoot free throws. And I'm like, do you see everything that he does that's otherworldly? Barkley is so good. I think Saquon Barkley is not only the best running back in this class, I think he's the best running back on planet Earth. I would take him over David Johnson. I would take him over Le'Veon Bell. I would take him really Alvin Kamara. Now, this also helps that, you know, he turned 21 years old a day ago and doesn't have that major – or 2 days ago – and doesn't have that major toll on his body that some of these other guys do. But from a pure talent standpoint, I've been evaluating guys for about 6 years now closely. It's not close. Like, he's much better than Leonard Fournette. He's miles better than Leonard Fournette. He's much better than Ezekiel Elliott. His home run ability is going to change everything. His receiving ability is going to change everything. He can lower a shoulder and run through you. His jump cut, he's basically, if like LeSean McCoy, Le'Veon Bell, and Todd Gurley morphed into one person, you'd have Saquon Barkley. And people keep asking me my comparison for him, and I joke that I'd say it's God. Like, he's something else, man. Like, I don't even know how to put it into words. You see me almost stuttering. He's so good, and his ceiling is so high, and what he does for an offense is so dynamic that I would take him top five, no questions asked.
Well, I had a question written down here. Let me scratch it off since you already answered it. I was going to say, is he a generational back? But you just compared him to God, so I think that pretty much answers that.
I think he's going to be what David Johnson is, except he's three times the athlete that David Johnson is.
Holy shit!
Is he generational back? Can we put that label on him?
Yes, you can put whatever label on him that says that he's fantastic, and I will sign off that I said that. I think his impact's going to be is basically like, remember LaDainian Tomlinson? He's scoring like 24 touchdowns a year for the Chargers and dominating receiving wise. I think he caught 100 balls one year. Like, that's what I think Barkley can do, and he's just going to completely change an offense. And the other thing is, he ran behind Penn State's offensive line.
Not good.
Which is garbage. And people are like, you can't draft a guy top 10 that only had 44 yards against Ohio State. I always tell people this. Go back and watch the film. He had 9 negative rush plays, right? 7 of which, by the time he had the ball, there was already a defender more than 3 yards in the backfield. That's not good. And 2 plays, he danced a little bit. He did. He also got 1 play called back where he broke like a 45-yard touchdown. The thing about Barkley is that, you know, like, you track some of these games and you'd be like, well, I guess Barkley's not having a good game. And then you check 2 minutes later and it's like, and now he has 180 all-purpose yards.
Home run, baby. Home run.
Yeah. His home run ability is incredible. And I really think that his vision is very underrated. People keep knocking it. I think he does dance occasionally, but I think that he's going to hit the correct hole well more than he's not. And his ceiling is so much higher than anyone else's.
Weiss?
Darius Geis.
Let's do Darius Geis.
So yeah, he's my second back, and it's been a hot take recently to put Geis ahead of Barkley, and people just immediately knock Barkley's vision and say Geis is better between the tackles. Darius Geis, I think he's got a shot to be there at 34 when the Giants pick.
Wow.
It'll be real interesting because I think his evaluation for me is incomplete right now. I want to see how he does at the combine and how he does at his pro day in terms of showing route running. Because right now he's just a dump off receiver. Like, he can catch the ball, but he doesn't really run any routes that are going to change the game. He's not going to split out in the slot and do all that stuff I just described for Barkley. That he's going to take his offense to the next level. He turns speed into power incredibly well. He's got great balance, good vision, very good cutter. Like, he's an excellent runner. Like, between the tackles, he's every bit Saquon Barkley is, maybe even a little bit better. But that receiving ability is what sets Saquon Barkley into another stratosphere as a prospect from Darius Geis. The thing that worries you about Geis is, you know, those violent runners you see in the NFL, their careers tend to last a little bit shorter. So you asked me earlier about Josh Rosen. You know, people were like, well, Geis was hurt this year. You got to throw that film away. I look at it in 2 ways. One, I look at it as a positive that Geis was hurt this year and was still very productive. He wasn't his 2016 self, but he was still good. The other thing I look at is Geis's running style historically leads to backs getting banged up. So I think Geis comes with a very high floor. I think he could be a guy that gets banged up. I think he could be a guy that's excellent in the NFL for 5 years, and then he signs a new contract, and all of a sudden it's like Marion Barber and falls off the face of the earth.
Yikes.
But, you know, if you're drafting a running back, you're kind of looking for one contract. That's kind of your goal. So I think Geis is a very high floor, high ceiling guy, but he does have that injury risk and doesn't have that developed pass game that I really look for out of a prospect.
Now, what about Sonny Michel?
So Michelle's biggest problem is that he fumbles the ball a lot. I think 1 out of every 54 touches. And for me, I don't really care that much about fumbling unless it's an issue. And for him, it is an issue. He's excellent in pass protection. That's the other thing about Barkley and Geis real quick. Barkley is incredible in pass protection. Like, all the stuff we just talked about, he will also take on your linebacker and square him up and drive him. Michelle might be the only back in the class that's better than Barkley at pass blocking. Like, he's really good. There's the game against Alabama, he takes on De'Aaron Payne. He takes on Minkah Fitzpatrick, who's known as the best blitzing secondary member in the country. And he takes him on against Notre Dame. There's a play where there's a free rusher, and he basically picks him up and slams him. And you never see that out of running back. And the reason that gets me excited is because he does have receiving ability as well, and he projects as a guy that can catch a lot of passes. He didn't his last year in college, but the year before he caught 26. So I really like his receiving ability, and then you talk about him between the tackles. He's got really good vision. He understands his blockers very well, and once he gets to the second level, he's got a second gear and that he can really explode and run through contact very well. The first level, he doesn't run through contact terrifically. People are talking about that Michelle may not test well, that he doesn't have the best agility. For me, his agility reminds me a little bit of Dalvin Cook, where it's not necessarily explosive, but what it is that his subtle movements are creating guys taking bad angles and then can run right by him. So it's, for me, it's not something that I particularly worry about with his testing. He has a lot of the tools that you look for, and at the top of the second round, I think he makes for an excellent pick.
So let's hear this one. Michelle versus Chubb. Who has the better NFL career?
Michelle.
Okay.
So with Chubb, what I talked about to start in terms of the first and second down back, I think Chubb is incredible in those two downs. Like, his power is terrific. His vision is good. Or his vision's excellence. He has long speed. He can hit the home run. He doesn't necessarily have the quickest burst since that injury. He's a very patient runner. He's going to finish runs. So we always talk about hidden yardage. Basically, one of the things I like to do if people want to go out and watch running backs is when they're first contacted, hit the pause button, kind of notate what yardage or yard line they're on, and then see where the run finishes. And Chubb's constantly grinding out for 3, 4, 5, 6 yards. But I really like him. I think he's kind of got a Jonathan Stewart-like career, which is a pretty good running back.
Great career, yeah.
I have a third-round grade on him. He only ran 53 routes the entire year. Since his knee injury, he never caught more than 5 passes in a season. Like, I think he's kind of really limited to those first two downs, and that's what drops him in the draft. But on those first two downs, really good. And for the Giants, if you took him in the third round, I think he would match up pretty well with a Wayne Gallman, who showed some receiving upside this year.
I'm going to give you a scenario. Let's hypothetically say that the first two pick for the first two picks for the Giants are quarterback, running back. Okay. First scenario is Darnold, Ronald Jones the second. They go USC, USC. Second is Mayfield and Geis. Third is Rosen and Michelle. And the fourth one, and I'm going to give you a wild card here, is Saquon Barkley and Mason Rudolph. Which one are you taking?
Can I take Saquon Barkley and Lamar Jackson and watch the Giants break the NFL?
I'm not going to give you Lamar Jackson in the second round. You know why? Because you love him too much. And yeah, if you love him too much, that means you're going to get him in round one.
Yeah. I just imagine if you put Odell Beckham, Evan Ingram, Sterling Shepard with Lamar Jackson and Saquon Barkley, and you're just like, hey, all of our guys – run sub 4.5, and a lot of them run sub 4.4.
I just went from 6 to midnight.
Yeah, yeah. Just that would be everyone's team in Madden. I can promise you that one.
Oh yeah.
So what were the? It was Barkley and Rudolph. Can you Barkley, run through?
Sure. So it was the USC guys: Darnold and Ronald Jones II, Baker Mayfield, and Geis. I'm going blank on his first name.
Jarius Geis, yeah.
Jarius Geis, yes. And then the third one was Josh Rosen, Sonny Michel. And the fourth one was Saquon Barkley and Mason Rudolph. And here, I'll throw in a fifth one for you as well. You ready?
Yeah.
I'll do Kerryon Johnson and Lamar Jackson. Giants trade back to get Lamar Jackson in the first, and then they go Kerryon Johnson in the second.
Probably have to go Mayfield and Geis, followed by Rosen and Michelle. And I like Rudolph a lot, but yeah, I mean, that's a tough question, and that's obviously what the Giants are looking at, right? They need to try to, because they're probably going to go quarterback at the two, and then the top of the second round, they'll take a running back. I just think Geis is my second running back, and Mayfield is my first quarterback, so it's hard for me not to pick that one. But I know Giants fans love Rosen, and he fits that system incredibly well. We didn't touch on Ronald Jones that much. He's very good between the tackles. He's got really good vision, really good home run speed. And the amazing thing is people just keep assuming that he's going to develop as a third round or a third down back and kind of catch the ball in the backfield. He really didn't run routes at all at USC. Everything was into the flat if he did. His blocking is okay at best. And He never caught more than 14 balls in college, and he never really caught the ball in high school ever when I was looking into it. So that's a little concerning for me. But again, with the Giants, they have Wayne Gallman who can fill that role. So I guess I'm beating around the bush with your answer, but I would go Mayfield and Geis.
Interesting.
Let's say if I switch Darnold and Mayfield. So let's do a quick one. Mayfield and Ronald Jones II, or Sam Darnold and Darius Geis.
These are tough questions.
I'm putting you on the spot, man.
I might lean the I'm gonna take the quarterback. I'm gonna take Mayfield over Darnold.
Okay.
All right.
And for the record, my second choice would have been Rosen and Michelle.
Yeah. Okay.
Rosen is my QB2, I'm sorry. And then Michelle is my RB3. So if Mayfield's QB1 and Geis is RB2, then that's kind of where I got to go. And then the next best scenario would be that one.
Awesome. One more running back question before we get into some listener questions. Best value running back in the draft?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked me this question. John Kelly of Tennessee is fun. Like, this guy reminds me a little bit of Alvin Kamara in terms of what he can bring to an NFL offense. He's not the same athlete that Kamara is, but he's a physical guy. He's 5'9", 205, short, compact runner, has incredible balance, runs through contact very well. He broke a tackle one out of every four runs, to kind of put in perspective. Last year, Hunt was one out of every 3.1. Kamara's one every 2.9. So Kelly's missed tackle rate is really good. He catches the ball incredibly well, 37 catches out of the backfield. He runs legitimate routes. He broke linebackers down in space. The first four games of the year, he had over 150 yards all-purpose, I think, in all four. He's got good vision. He doesn't have great long speed. That's kind of where he's not going to necessarily run away from people, but he's got good burst and can get to his second gear. The interesting thing with Kelly is that if you look at his film and his numbers – kind of goes where Tennessee goes. So his first four games of the year, talking about the top three back in the class, and then he smoked weed and got suspended. For me, listen, if I'm going to take a guy off the board every time they smoke weed, I'm going to run at NFL players. The team quit on Butch Jones, and the offensive line quit, and the whole team quit. And, you know, I think he quit a little bit too, which really led to his terrible numbers down the stretch. I mean, I think the last couple games of the year, he had under 3 yards of carry each game. But I think a lot of that has to do with the situation and the game much more than him being a flash-in-the-pan guy. So for me, I get a guy that's going to dominate on third downs, break tackles, make people miss. And he's also a tone setter. He's got the best stiff arm in the class. Like, he's the kind of guy that makes a run. It might be like 6 yards, and everybody on the team is fired up. He probably has my favorite play of all the film I've evaluated so far. There's a play against Florida where the guy comes up and tries to tackle him, and he hits him with a stiff arm so hard that the guy goes like literally 9 yards on the ground. He's just sliding on the ground like he's on a slip and slide. So Kelly's a lot of fun, and he's the guy that I would target. I mean, I have an early second round grade on him. He's probably going to go round 3, round 4. But if you miss on a running back round 2, that's the guy I would want on my team.
Love it. All right. Weiss, any other questions from you before we get into some fan questions?
None. Let's do it.
All right. We got another scenario for you. Ready for this one? Taking Barkley at 2 or trade back with the Bills, getting a lot of picks, and going offensive line and Lamar Jackson with 21 and 22.
So you trade 2 for 21 and 22?
Yeah.
I wouldn't do that trade at all.
Yeah, say the I think they'd get a lot more for that.
Yeah, because I mean, we're talking about two guys that you're very high on, Barkley at 2, or the best offensive lineman on the board to fix, you know, one of the 5 problem spots, and Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, the thing is, if I had to choose between Barkley and Jackson, and let's say like a Connor Williams kind of tackle, I'd probably lean Jackson just because of how much I love him. But in a bubble, I wouldn't trade Barkley for 21 and 22.
All right. Okay, this question is just not possible. What would have to happen to draft both Mayfield and Barkley?
Give up your next three drafts?
Yeah.
I guess one of them needs to have a serious injury or off the field thing happen between draft.
Last one.
Top 10.
Yeah. All right. Last one before we let you go. If the Browns mess around, don't go all out for Cousins and grab Josh Rosen at number one. What's the drop off from him to guys like Darnold and Mayfield?
Well, I mean, Mayfield I have ranked above Rosen. Yep. I think Darnold's ceiling is probably higher than Rosen's. His floor is much lower. I don't think it's a huge drop-off.
All right.
I got a question for Elliot before he goes.
Of course, whatever.
If Davis Webb was in this draft, and I'm laughing because I already know the answer to this, but I'm asking you just for the sake of the listeners. If Davis Webb is in this draft class, where would you rank him? Tell me, where would you rank him amongst your QBs, and what round do you think he would go in?
Well, let's see. Last year, I think he was QB 13 for me with a round 7 grade.
Jeez. Oh. And that quarterback class was not good
early on. Last year, I said there were three guys I wanted, Trubisky, Mahomes, and Watson, with Watson being my number one guy. I didn't like Kaiser, and I thought after that, you could kind of keep the rest. Webb has terrible feet, terrible pocket presence. He's inaccurate. He doesn't go through progressions. He got a decent deep ball. He only threw to very limited routes. He started the year off pretty decently. I think he was PFF's number 4 overall graded quarterback for the first 3 games of the year when they played nothing but garbage teams, and then they played real teams. And I think he finished like 119th in those games. He's not good. Like, mentally, physically, he's just not very good. In terms of, I made the joke earlier about Josh Allen kind of being the big white guy with a bad arm that NFL guys love. I think that was Davis Webb last year. If you want to just feel comfortable moving on from him, watch his Stanford game and his Washington game last year, and you're like, dude, why did this guy get drafted? He's really, really bad. So to answer your question, I wouldn't want him drafted at all in this year's class. That's much deeper.
Man, I hope people that somehow think that he needs to continue to be developed and he can be the future, I hope you're listening to this. Thank you. Listen, I appreciate that.
Of course. I mean, we talked a little bit about podcasts, and like, I'm a Jets fan, and last year they were sitting there at 6, and they could have gotten Mahomes or Watson, and they could have fixed all of this, but instead they're like, we need to give Hackenberg another year, and they didn't touch the field. Like, Davis Webb not touching the field last year tells you all you need to know about him.
Yep.
Like, this idea that they want to save someone, this is the NFL, right? They're not saving guys. They want to see what they have in players. And when they're not willing to show what they have, it means that they're very scared they made a mistake and he's looking bad. And he didn't look good in preseason, and he didn't look good in college. He lost his college job, which is why he transferred to Cal. Like, I just feel like, you know, if all your stuff says you don't look very good, to me that points much more likely that you're not good than you're going to somehow turn everything around.
Do you think that he didn't play at all last year was more because of how he looked in practice when they kind of gave him increased snaps, or was it because of what happened with the head coach and the GM sort of getting the axe, you know, right at the beginning of this sort of weird transition that the Giants tried to start?
It could very easily be a combination of both, but you know, when you have a young guy that you drafted and you already broke Eli Manning's streak, why would you not throw him in there when you're going to get the second overall pick regardless? I mean, why would you not want something on him to see for your new general manager to evaluate? And that's the other thing is, like, Gettleman didn't draft him, so there's going to be no allegiances to him.
And the only thing he said, I think the only positive thing he said about him was that, I think it was something where along the lines of, I know he was a 2-year starter, or he said something when it's kind of like, where it's like, wow, that's the only positive thing you know about Davis Webb. So I listen, man, I agree with you. I didn't like the pick from the get go. Ethan can vouch for me.
Yep.
But I agree with you, man. I don't see him having any impact on anything the Giants do.
Nor should he.
Nor should he. Yeah.
I think it's well said. I don't think I can add anything to it. I think that's just really well said.
Perfect. All right, Elliot, I think that about does it. I'm going to let you plug yourself one last time before we go. Your Twitter is ElliotChrist1L. Go ahead and plug whatever podcast you want.
Yeah, guys, so I hope you enjoyed some of my analysis today. I'm doing a podcast called Draft Daily. You can follow us on Twitter at Draft Daily Pod. It's on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And basically what I'm doing is every day I come out with a new guest, and we talk about a prospect, and we go in depth on him about what we like, what we don't like, what his comparison is, what his ideal fit is. And we try to give you a general overview of a guy. Podcast lasts about 20 minutes. This way, you know, instead of a lot of fluff that you hear about prospects, it goes really in depth. And then that same guy on Twitter, I'll do a prospect thread. I'll put about 20 GIFs out on a guy trying to show you different things that I'm seeing in the film and explain the different plays and different traits that I'm seeing in a guy.
Love it. All right, guys, go follow Elliot on Twitter. Subscribe to his podcast. I think that's honestly how we found you, was that Josh Rosen thread. So definitely some good content.
Awesome threads. Yeah. Awesome threads.
Good content on the twitter.com. Elliot, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Anytime, man. Anytime, guys. It was a lot.
Thanks for coming on, Elliot. Appreciate it.
We're back. Thank you to Elliot for coming on and breaking down literally everything you need to know about quarterbacks and running backs. That was unbelievable.
We put him on the spot a little bit.
Dude, and he killed it. Honestly, I think our listeners are going to be very thrilled with what they had to hear, especially as it pertains to the quarterbacks. He likes a lot of these quarterbacks. Yeah. Good things to say about Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen. So I've been a big believer all along that it's going to be real hard for the Giants to fuck up the number two overall pick. And Elliot sort of just reinforced that for me. Let's get into real quick. The Giants have rounded out their coaching staff with Mike Shula as offensive coordinator coming over from Carolina. A lot of people not happy about it. I have pretty much the same stance I had when we recorded 2 weeks ago, was it? A week ago, whenever it was. I do not care who the offensive coordinator is as long as we have Pat Shurmur as the head coach, because this guy's track record speaks for itself. He's worked with a variety of quarterbacks. He's had success with so many different quarterbacks. And if he's going to be overseeing the offensive scheme, you could put me at offensive coordinator, and I think a lot of people would feel safe. Now, where the Shula hire worries me a little bit is quarterback development, because I think for a guy like Cam Newton, there are still some mechanical issues that are very evident in his game. And I think he gets away with it because he's an athletic freak. And I think
because he's a beast.
And I think that's what's carried him through a majority of his career. So as it pertains to play calling and offensive scheme, not worried in the slightest. As it pertains to Mike Shula, the quarterback coach, a little bit nervous, considering I think the Giants might draft a quarterback number two overall. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm sort of with you. The one thing about Shula is I think there was better candidates out there, Darrell Bevell to be one. I think I would have sort of been much more happier with him. But again, I mean, you know, you have to take a wait-and-see approach. I mean, he's not calling the plays, so that's a plus. You talk about the work he's done with quarterbacks. I mean, the one thing I'll say is Cam Newton was a beast coming out. I mean, everyone knew this guy. Yeah. I mean, there was some doubt people had, but, I mean, Cam Newton was a beast coming out. He was the number one overall pick, so he was coming in with a lot of talent. I'm sure, you know, Shula helped him with something. You talk about some of the mechanical issues that still exist with Cam, so there is stuff to be worried about. But, again, I mean, it's ultimately going to come down to, okay, how can he help Pat Shurmur put together game plans? How can he help develop not only quarterbacks, but some of these other young guys? Obviously, the work he's done with Greg Olsen. So we'll see. But, you know, I'm not like, this isn't like the James Betcher hire where it's like, wow, you know, yeah, it's a home run hire. This is sort of, you know, sort of like a buzzkill. But, again, we're not going to, you know, sit here and deem it as the worst thing ever like a lot of other people are.
Yeah, no, I think it's overblown. I mean, you brought up Betcher. Betcher was an unreal hire. I think, you know, McGaughy coming in as special teams coordinator, getting rid of Tom Quinn is just an addition by subtraction, if you ask me. And then, listen, to Shurmur as head coach, doesn't really matter as long as, you know, he's there and he's helping organize the game plan and calling the plays. You know, I don't really think that there's too much for Giants fans to be upset about right now. So,
if you want to be worried about something because that's just the way you are, be worried if them two just don't work because they haven't worked previously and they have sort of two different offenses.
Yeah, but, and then there comes the assumption that Gettleman forced Shula onto, you know, Shurmur because of, you know, previous connections. Although there's going to be some good wordplay with Shula and Shurmur.
Yeah, I think we'll see. We'll see if Baker Mayfield comes into discussion with the whole RPO that
Shula
ran in Carolina. So that's something that Albert Breer pointed out, but we'll see. But yeah, it's not something that I'm like losing sleep about.
Yeah, not at all. Final thoughts before we end the pod?
Got no final thoughts, man. None. We just keep this train rolling to the combine. I think we'll start seeing a lot more stuff come out as we inch closer, man. But Elliot did a great job breaking everything down for us.
Yeah, Elliot was unreal. I'm sure we'll have him on again once he, you know, goes more in depth on some of the other prospects. But, you know, that's it for us.
Talk about the draft, we're going to go into free agency.
Yes, I'm excited for free agency.
I am. I think they're going to throw a boat at Andrew Norwell.
Yo, if they could somehow get Pugh and Norwell as like the foundation for this line, I'd be very happy.
Can I say one thing about how I think some people are just so confused about the salary cap?
Go for it.
The Giants might not have they have a healthy cap situation right now. They have like $25 million. I know it's not a lot compared to some of these other teams, but looking ahead, they are very, very cap healthy, where they can extend, you know, Odell Beckham this year, keep his cap number at $8 million, and they can still go out and, you know, get a couple of linemen. So I think people don't really have an understanding of how the cap works, and maybe you and I need to do like a 3-hour episode breaking it down.
We'll get Kevin Abrams on.
I mean, the only reason I say this is because I get so many questions about like, can so and so reconstruct this contract, and I'm like, listen, you can't reconstruct a contract when a guy is on the final year of his deal.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Reconstructing a contract is basically take this money, move it back, break it down through signing bonuses or other ways, changing language. But you can't do that when he's on the last year of his deal. So I get a ton of these questions. I'm not ignoring you guys. I've just repeated over and over and over again. The Giants could sign anybody they want. Does that mean that they can get outbidded? Yeah, sure. There's teams that could offer more up front, like San Francisco or Cleveland or whatever. But ultimately, they are cap healthy where they can extend some of their guys right now and also target some big free agents. But I think they're going to be very, very active in trying to improve their offensive line.
Yeah,
I do think that if you want to touch on the free agency.
Listen, that's Gettleman.
Yeah.
He needs his hog mollies.
He better. I mean, all this hog molly stuff, I mean, it's all cute right now and everything makes for cute headlines. But listen, man, I want to see it, you know. We saw Jerry sort of, you know, completely abandon this whole fixing the offensive line thing when some of these draft picks weren't working. Well, and I expect to see Gettleman aggressively trying to get Andrew Norwell, who's sort of been labeled his guy. And I want to see if he can somehow get, you know, Justin Pugh back. Now, if he can do that, kudos to Kevin Abrams because he's sort of been labeled as his cap wizard.
Yep.
And kudos to, you know, Dave Gettleman because he's been, you know, he's valued the offensive line. But we'll
finally,
see.
Yeah.
It's funny to me. It's widely regarded that two of the best offensive linemen free agents out there are former Giants, Weston Richburg and Justin Pugh. That's wild.
Yeah.
That is pretty wild.
All right. Let's end the pod there. Follow me on Twitter, EthanGSN. Follow YSNYG Daily. Blog, GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher Radio. Soon to be Spotify. That's about it. Guys, we'll speak to you next week.
Peace.